I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
This is Internet Marketing.
Hello and welcome to the Internet Marketing Podcast brought to you by Site Visibility. I'm your host, Scott Colnut, and today I have Rachel Pearson, our digital marketing manager from Site Visibility. And just to set this up for the listeners, a few months back when I took over hosting of the podcast, I was saying how I wanted to get more representatives from the Site Visibility team, bring you the actual insider tips and advice from our team. I managed to get Jason Woodford, our CEO, on as our first guest. I think Marcos Martin has appeared a couple of times now. And I'm really excited to speak to Rachel, who will come in and talk to you about all things brand affinity. Good morning to you, Rachel.
Good morning, Scott. Hello.
I've got my cat here as well. He won't leave me alone. So hopefully I'll be able to edit him out a little bit. But sorry to any listeners that hear a little bit of cat meowing in the background. So, yeah, in terms of brand affinity, so I've noticed this kind of sneak into your vocabulary over these last couple of months a little bit more. And so when we were thinking about this episode today, it made perfect sense. It's top of mind for you to speak about this. And being very honest with you, it's brand affinity marketing as a phrase is something that I'd never heard of before. Can you maybe first speak on yourself a little bit about your background and then go into what brand affinity marketing is and why it's top of mind for you?
Sure. So I'm excited to kind of talk about brand affinity marketing because the phrase is relatively new to me as well. But I guess as intro, a little bit of my background. So I'm the digital marketing manager at SiteViz, which kind of means a lot of different things. Primarily, I lead our specialist team. I support the team with their learning and development and also in terms of the ideation and production and delivery of our digital marketing strategies for our clients. So I work closely on that and have my fingers in many pies at SiteViz, which is great because I love pie. but my professional experience is primarily in tech SEO, SEO and content. I'm pretty much an all-rounder, kind of similar to you, Scott, interested in everything to do with digital marketing, quite curious about those things. And then my kind of side hustle is I'm a trained videographer, editor, and kind of lead those video marketing elements at SiteViz as well, developing those. So anything that covers video and podcasting and creative media marketing, all of that stuff I'm super interested in. And storytelling, which I'm sure we'll talk about in terms of brand affinity marketing in a bit, is what I'm most passionate about and what I think brands should be doing a lot more of and a lot better as well. So my kind of mission, I guess, is to make video marketing and production accessible for the people that I work with. And that's, yes, that's kind of my background. And in terms of brand affinity marketing, I've kind of been thinking a lot about video in general because that's a kind of core part of what I do, what I'm interested in and passionate about. And I kind of, yeah, I really believe in its power as part of marketing video, and that seems to be one of the core formats or mediums that brands harness in order to create this brand affinity. So, yeah, I think that that's kind of where the interest in brand affinity has come from. Brand affinity, so as a definition, is when customers recognize you as a brand as sharing the same values and common interests. I think it's probably the closest you can come to having unconditional love for a brand. So the kind of feelings that we have for people, I think it's probably the kind of closest you can get to for a business or a brand that you are a customer of.
Yeah, that's a really great intro. And you mentioned some of those projects that you work on as side hustles, but I think you're downplaying your skills there. So for our listeners, Rachel is both an advocate for all things video and an expert in all things video. And yeah, you have your fingers in many pies, which is great for me and also difficult for me, because I'm going to try and keep us on the straight and narrow on the podcast today so we don't go off on too many tangents, because we're interested in a lot of different areas. But yeah, that's really interesting about brand affinity. I guess for me, the phrases I'm more familiar with, and maybe you'll be able to tell me whether I'm along the right lines or not, but brand advocacy, that's something that I'm more familiar with as a phrase. Yeah, I guess just branding or community, that's another phrase that comes to mind.
Yeah.
And if I'm along the right lines there, then I've got the gist of what you were exploring there.
Yeah. It's also kind of confused a little bit with brand loyalty.
Right.
Brand advocacy, I think, kind of fits within the same ballpark. Loyalty is a bit different in that loyalty doesn't necessarily indicate that brand loyalty doesn't really indicate that you have a strong personal connection with a brand. It's more rational and based in what a brand can provide for you in terms of a service or a product, rather than having that emotional connection that you would redefine brand affinity with.
Okay, that's a great distinction. That actually helps me understand a little bit more as well. So you've mentioned that kind of brand affinity is top of mind for you, mainly because of your interest in video and I guess a lot of your interest when you're creating video, maybe you'll be able to speak on this a little bit more for me, but I guess that's your goal, right? To make an emotional connection for your video, regardless of any video that you create. Mm. Is that kind of where the middle ground is between brand affinity marketing and then video production? Where the connection is between them both, maybe?
Yeah, I think so. I think that you can create that emotional connection through other formats as well. I think video, just because it kind of in a very raw way, it demands the attention of all of your senses. Maybe not smell, that would be a bit weird, but it's visual, it's sound, the kind of music that you can put with it, because it's so creative. I think that it's one of the best mediums for creating that brand affinity. But it's also, the messaging that you put in your video. You can make a lovely video with like people looking happy and some nice music, and you can create somewhat of emotion. But if you don't have, and we'll come on to how to create brand affinity, I'm sure, in a bit, but if you don't have that kind of core message behind what you're wanting to say and really carefully thinking about how you want people to feel, how you want to make your customers feel, then it's not going to be effective. The marketing aspect of brand affinity I found a little bit harder to define, but as I've been pondering that, I've kind of come to a conclusion that brand affinity marketing is almost like a resurgence of what we saw in like 40s, 50s, 60s. If you think about Mad Men, that kind of thing, the way they put campaigns together was really based around trying to create emotional connections between a brand they're working with and the consumer. And they did that by communicating shared values and common interests. And that's what brand affinity marketing really is. And I guess we've got access now to create things like video that they didn't have back then. But in some ways, brand affinity marketing is made for a kind of less cynical world and a less cynical consumer, which is why I think treading carefully in terms of how you create video and how you convey your message through video or other mediums is really important. You can't just kind of try and force emotion. It has to come from somewhere really genuine in your business.
So that's a really interesting point for me. So I might even take that as a clip, because I think that's such an important point. You can't force emotion. It has to come from somewhere genuine. It has to be authentic to translate to affinity in someone else. And I know as much as me, you hate talking about COVID-19 at the moment, because we've all been speaking about it. But COVID-19 and everything that's happened in economy and marketing and business in the world, it has accelerated a lot of people's lives. And in marketing, that it's that point that you just touched on, which I think it's accelerated for a lot of people. So a lot of businesses are thinking, a lot of businesses may not have had affinity. They may have been very transactional in nature. And now they're realizing that actually for longevity, for loyalty, for all these other things, they have to have that emotional connection with the customer.
Mm-hmm.
So are you of a similar view that COVID-19 has accelerated that need for affinity? And why and how has brand affinity stuck in terms of being top of mind for you right now? Is it just COVID-19 or is there more to it?
I think, you're totally right. I think when we discussed what we wanted to chat about, which is many things, we were like, let's stay away from COVID-19 and lockdown and furlough and all of that stuff. I'm done with it. And I'm always slightly wary when I hear from people or brands or anywhere where they talk about how COVID-19's accelerated a need within their marketing, because I think there was a need there already that should have been addressed regardless of a worldwide pandemic. So I think there's a risk of people using COVID-19 as kind of a, I mean, it's human nature, I guess, to kind of be reminded by hard times what you need to do and how important it is. And if there's one thing that I'd want marketers to take out of this whole experience is that you should have been doing this stuff all along, and, you know, like, it's important. So I do think it has accelerated the need for it, for brands, but that need has always been there, regardless of what's been going on in the world. But yeah, I guess I think video as part of brand affinity strategy is actually more important. Well, I guess more urgent now for brands who are wanting to keep their heads above water and kind of stay in the game as long as they can to ride this out. But I think it's more attainable for businesses right now because of potentially how people are feeling and what they're going through. So we're all seeking kind of connection and comfort, reassurance, things we can believe in, you know, those positive stories, things that we can trust in again. And it's all within a brand's power to convey how they can meet all of those needs and desires and feelings of their audiences. Because, and I think I spoke recently on a webinar with Pi Data Metrics about how important it is to not just see your consumers and customers as numbers, but actually, you know, we're all going through this whole thing in the world at the moment. There's not one person that hasn't been touched by some outcome of what's been going on. So we've all got a frame of reference for how people must be feeling in the world and what they need and what messages are going to really resonate. So, yeah, I think, yeah, like I said, I think it's important. It's more attainable now, I think, if people can kind of harness the kind of process behind going about it.
Yeah, no, that's a really interesting way of looking at it as well. And I think somewhere in there you said something really interesting, which I hadn't thought about too. I think I may have covered this in another podcast. I just can't remember which one, but I touched on it, but I haven't spoken about it too much. But it's that consumers are maybe looking for affinity more now. Mm-hmm. So it's something within us that's making us want that emotional connection at this time. And so maybe there's a change in consumer behavior, which has brought brand affinity marketing to the forefront of marketing a little bit more. Even though, as you said, regardless, this should have been kind of front and center within people's marketing plans. It's kind of surfaced it more glaringly, obvious, more prominently we should be doing this, or we should have been focusing on this all along. That's the kind of message that I'm receiving from when you talk about
I think
that.
People are a bit more emotionally vulnerable at the moment, potentially, as well. So that's something for brands to be really aware of, because if you don't plan these kind of your kind of brand affinity strategy or advocate kind of strategy, and you're thinking about using video to speak genuinely and authentically to your customers, and if you kind of go about it the wrong way, there's this cancel culture at the moment, isn't there? Like you get one thing kind of disastrously wrong. So it's important not to exploit the kind of emotional state of consumers at the moment. So it's a really delicate balance. It's quite a difficult thing. I'd love to say I've got exactly the right top tips to give you to avoid cancelled by, you know, sort of connecting with your audiences meaningfully, but I don't. but I think that kind of information comes from within your brand, so you're going to know what feels wrong and the wrong tone, I think.
Well, funny you should say feels. It's like how you feel, because this also translates to video for me, because you can somewhat get away with being inauthentic through copy, through other mediums, through social media posts. Mm. You can kind of, just present it differently. But in terms of video, if when you put someone in front of that camera, it can be very difficult. People feel whether that person's genuine or not, in my opinion. Mm. When I watch videos, it's like I very quickly get a sense of whether I trust someone or not. And I know there are techniques, and maybe you'll even speak on some way you can, you know, that you can maybe force that a little bit and force the feeling or emotion of trust. But really, you can't get away from it on video. So I guess that maybe, correct me if I'm wrong, but is your view that that's another reason that video makes brand affinity, video connects with brand affinity marketing maybe more naturally than any other medium?
Yeah, I mean, I think you've got to have the right person. If you have people in your video, brand videos, and if you're using things like podcasts as well, I think you can. Sometimes the person that might be the best for appearing in those videos or hosting those podcasts might not necessarily be the person you think of first in terms of responsibility or area of expertise or anything like that. It might be someone outside of your marketing team, outside of your, you know, senior leadership team. It might be someone who's working in, you know, customer services. It's all about finding the right personality, but, you know, the right personality that fits and is representative of your brand personality as well. So I think it's looking for authenticity in your business, but also people who are, I think, easy to warm to. And yeah, it's kind of a slightly awkward saying, like, find the likable people in your business. But I think that that's going to help kind of that authenticity as well. And you're right. I think anybody can tell. And maybe that's the reason a lot of people and brands aren't doing a whole lot of kind of brand video in terms of brand affinity campaigns or strategy, because actually it is quite a vulnerable thing to do as a business, especially if you haven't done it before. It's probably quite terrifying in a way, because, you know, you're trying something new. Video does make you feel very vulnerable. It's something I've done a few months ago. I really wanted to start getting a feeling that I felt more authentic when I recorded videos, so projects that I was working on. And as well as having like the right person, the likable person, a warm person, someone who's confident and representative of your brand, it does just come down to like practicing and videoing yourself, recording yourself, watching it back. One of my previous roles was working at a company that helped teachers to sort of self-reflect on their teaching methods. So they would record themselves on video and watch it back later. Sometimes they would share it with peers for feedback. And that use of video was incredibly powerful for teachers to develop their style. So I think, you know, the same thing, if you're working on video in a brand, practice and watch yourself back on video. It's painful the first two times, and then you start to go, actually, I really like this thing that I'm doing in this video, or I can do more of this. So it's definitely about practice as well.
Yeah, no, that's interesting. It translates to podcasting as well, I can tell you, because I've had to go through the process of recording these podcasts and editing them and hearing my voice for the first time over and over again. And it is initially it's a torturous process, and then it does become easier, and as you said, you start to get into the flow of just figuring out actually what you enjoy about yourself and how you might, you know, on podcasting tweak this or tweak that.
Yeah,
yeah, it just becomes like with anything, it becomes more comfortable with you become more comfortable with it over time. There's something else that you said that's just fascinating, Rachel, which it keeps coming up over and over again in through different mechanisms, but all kind of related to marketing conversations, is that there may be historically used to be this mentality that the best person to do all marketing activity, so marketing could be anything to do with social media or just rich media in general, video, podcasting, was your marketing person. But in respect of brand affinity and authenticity in particular, it's actually there are other people in your business that may be out to present your brand more authentically than any marketing manager could. So roles in that respect are perhaps or almost certainly developing over the years where, again, maybe this is the thing that should have always been the case, but there's just this habit of getting into kind of getting pigeonholed in life in general. And marketing is exactly the same thing. It's you have to look beyond your marketing team to get the best out of your marketing.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that those roles, you know, traditional sort of department assigned roles is a really archaic way of looking at things now. And I think it definitely kind of limits you if you kind of think, well, only the marketing people can do the marketing. Well, marketing people in general are, you know, hopefully very, you know, experienced in their areas of marketing, of which there are many, doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to be the best person, that they're also a great, you know, presenter for video or that they feel comfortable doing that. And I think that we have to move away from the assumptions that those kind of roles within a brand have to be, you know, sat within marketing. So definitely one of the things that I'd love people to take away from this podcast is look at your wider business, everyone in your business, like talk to them, ask them questions about themselves, get to know each other a lot better. And the people that you'll get to start to get a sense of the kind of people that would naturally be a great fit for representing your brand, either in video or podcasting as well. That's definitely something I'd love for people to go away and do, because I think it's going to be, I mean, as well as being just a lovely thing to do to go and get to know like a lot more of your coworkers who you wouldn't normally speak to, it's going to do wonders for your video marketing and hopefully brand affinity. So yeah, I would love for people to go in, you know, take that as like a tip over anything else I say today.
I think that's fantastic advice, but you've got to keep listening because I'm sure there's going to be more. So we've spoken theoretically a little bit about brand affinity and our thoughts on it, but not so much practically. So if, you know, getting started with brand affinity for the first time, what are some tools or some frameworks that perhaps our listeners can use just to get started and bring this to life within their business?
Yeah, so I've been thinking about this a lot as well, because I think we're quite process-led at SiteViz, which is just done us like incredible amounts of good, and I think I've been thinking about this in terms of a process where you get started and what kind of tools you can use along the way to kind of help with that process, just in terms of thinking about brand affinity marketing, whether you've gotten started with that, whether this is the first time you've heard about it, or if you're just curious. But I think where you need to start and where you need to have a lot of involvement from your wider business is just sussing out what your personality is as a business, very much like you would suss out another person's personality. And then I think everybody knowing what your mission is as a business. So starting with those kind of two things, and I think like hashing it out in conversations with or workshopping it with a cross-section of your business, if you've got a small business, with not a lot of people, you can get everybody involved. And I think one of the things people are hesitant about is spending a lot of time on these kind of things, because it's not necessarily immediately tangible what the benefit of it is. So I'm hoping that we're kind of communicating what the benefits are of it generally. But so I think starting off with really nailing down your personality as a business, because that's how you're going to relate to other people with personalities, having personality yourself. And I did read somewhere there's kind of five defined types of personality. There's a really good resource somewhere, which has actually just gone out of my head, but I'll find it so we can put it in the show notes, about those five or six personality types that have kind of been worked out through brand affinity research. And then there's kind of attributes as part of those personalities. So that's a great framework to kind of review and start that part of the process off. And then obviously, I think across marketing for the whole of for any discipline is obviously knowing your customer and target audience inside out. I don't think that that's something that is a new bit of information for anybody who's in marketing. But once you know your personality as a business, I think you're going to find it's going to kind of help you refine your target audience as well, because you're going to want to find people that have those shared values, which is what brand affinity marketing is all about. And then there are tools out there. There's tools like Brandwatch. They've got some great resources about brand affinity marketing as well. If you're an established brand that hasn't been looking into brand affinity marketing or strategy before, then I think this is an especially important part of the process, whereby you can you should be judging your kind of brand associations. So you can do that through a tool in Brandwatch, I believe. But you gather that mention data, so brand mentions, and then you create a word cloud. Remember those?
I love those.
Seem like they are
art to me.
Very, they seem like very like 2010 kind of thing, but I believe in them. But it's just a way of visualizing the data for yourself. So you get all of this brand mention data back. You plug it into a word cloud, and you sort of see what words are coming up as how your brand is associated, and maybe with other brands that you might be associated with, like where you're kind of sat in that kind of pool. And that kind of process will help you figure out what your current personality is, and you know, if your current marketing and your current work has been kind of aligned with how your consumers and customers are seeing you. I think that's a really important part of the process. And then values and interests. So coming from your personality and your mission and your kind of brand associations, if you are, yeah, I think it comes back to what we were saying about identifying those people in your business that aren't necessarily part of your marketing team. You can't achieve brand affinity by ignoring the personalities you have in the room driving your business. They are the kind of authentic parts of what, you know, but that's what is going to feed into your brand personality. And I think a lot of times where businesses have gone wrong is when they've kind of tried to force a personality that isn't representative of the personalities that are leading the business or involved in the business, part of your customer service teams, you know, who your consumers actually talk to. So I think you do need to kind of follow along that kind of methodology, really. And then I think one of the greatest tools for brand affinity marketing is social media. And unfortunately, it does kind of seem to be one of the areas that people don't see as necessarily important as some of the other areas of marketing, you know, marketing areas like different marketing disciplines. I kind of feel like it might be seen as like a slightly devalued role, but in terms of brand affinity marketing and even brand loyalty and advocacy, it's one of the most important places, because that is literally where you have all of your touch points with your customers and where you can interact with them, and obviously video use on those platforms. It doesn't have to cost you money to produce video. And yeah, like I said, I think too little importance and respect is given to those kind of roles in businesses. And I think I get the sense that people are wary of video, especially kind of small to medium businesses, because there is this kind of idea that it is expensive and time consuming to produce. So something I'm passionate about is kind of a re-education in that. And yeah, so I think that's kind of roughly kind of the process and some of the tools that can help you with, like, you know, starting off with a brand affinity strategy, or at least opening up the conversation about kind of where you're currently at as a business with everybody and where you want to go and who your customers are and what their, you know, their needs and their concerns are, especially at the moment, but always.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
That last point about social media is so fascinating to me, because I think of social media as the glue between all of your marketing communication. Mm. And it's the medium through which to make an emotional connection, through which to drive brand affinity. And you talked about, and I've always felt this way and experienced this myself, is that social media is always the thing where the question that always comes up, it's always left to last typically, because the question is always, how much money does it return, and does it return money immediately? Yeah. And it really, you know, it's not that kind of platform. It's not that kind of channel. Social media is a contributor or attributes to the other platform or to the other channels and enhances them. But the thing is, if you take social media and you think of it in the context of we've just discussed as the kind of the glue for brand affinity, for emotion, and then you don't invest in that platform, so you essentially just rip out your heart. I don't know if you faced this challenge before, but I imagine at some point you're going to come up against the question of what's the return on investment of video. How do you answer that question? It's so difficult, really, because it's essentially. And maybe you don't answer it. I was speaking on one of my personal podcasts about something similar with a guy called Doc Williams. And we were talking about, you know, what happens if you try and work with someone and they ask you to do something like that. So they ask you to put the return on investment on video. And he was just saying, you know, don't work with them, because it's really so important that if someone fundamentally doesn't understand the emotional connection between customers and businesses, and that social media is the medium in which to make that happen. How do you, it takes so much education to get someone out of that mindset. Is that even worth your time to do? So I think that's a fascinating challenge for any creative marketer, and particularly someone like yourself who's in video production.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, there are some ways you can look at, you know, obviously like kind of performance of some of those aspects, so social media performance and performance of video if you're using YouTube and things like that. But I think you're right. It's kind of the attitude from where that is coming from. Well, I get it because specifically for smaller businesses who are at the moment, you know, really desperate, just trying to hold on. Being able to kind of have some sense of what they might make back after an initial investment, I get that concern. That's, you know, totally understandable and relatable. But then I think, you know, I think it's down to kind of the yous and me's and us's of marketers to kind of educate sometimes. But then, you know, there's education and there's really trying to just change someone's attitude to something, which I think is a completely different, and that's not our responsibility really. You're the owner of a business, or you're head of marketing in a business, or responsible for marketing in a business. I think your attitude, especially if times are hard, are to be open to trying things and taking some what you might perceive at the time as risks. But again, it kind of comes down to brand affinity of like, maybe you know, agencies. So, you know, like us at SiteViz and other agencies, like, what is our brand affinity? Are people going to trust us and follow our recommendations and try these things? So, and that's a challenge for us as well. Like, how can we sort of communicate the value of brand affinity marketing, use of video, use of podcasts to a lot of businesses? All of that stuff is going to be brand new. So I think there's a balance between our responsibility as marketers for education, but I think business owners for having a kind of open mind, an open attitude, and trusting people like us.
That's a great way to respond to that question. Thanks. And so I'm curious about any brands or any businesses that have achieved an emotional connection with you, Rachel. So who's managed to capture your heart?
Well, I'm excited about this part, because it might just be me, and my heart might just be very available for people to emotionally there have been some funny.
I might not ask for you to share your contact details at the end now, just because you'll get loads of strange messages.
I'll just get loads of messages of people really appealing to me with emotional
Yeah, it's like an agony aunt.
Some examples of businesses that I think have pretty much nailed brand affinity marketing was, one of them is Wistia. I think in my notes for the show, I was like, oh, I'm mentioning Wistia a lot. So at the risk of sounding like a bit of a fangirl, one of their campaigns that they did, and this really appealed to me on those shared values kind of level of brand affinity marketing, because it wasn't last year, maybe the year before, where they produced a series of videos. They actually turned out that they made a version of those videos into kind of a bit of a feature length kind of docu-film called 110-100, where they created a brand marketing video for Wistia, but they created it three times with three different budgets to see what the kind of difference would be. The first was 1,000, 10,000, and then I think 100,000. And they plugged all of their marketing budget into this. So they took a huge risk, I think, and just went, all of our marketing budget for the year, we're going to do this film and document what happens and the outcomes, to kind of prove the hypothesis that the budget that you have for a brand video doesn't really matter. And you and I went to go and see that, the Odeon, when they showed that, and Phil Nottingham did a Q&A afterwards, which was really, really super interesting. And we've been watching those videos back at SiteViz as well. And I think that was, for me as a marketer, they knew the audience for those videos, for that film. That made me feel really like inspired and motivated emotionally about, you know, taking risks as marketers and leading with creativity in marketing. So that was a campaign that they made, and those videos you can go and see. They're really great. But also as a marketer, but also as a filmmaker as well, just to see the difference in the three end videos that they made with those three different budgets. And actually, you know, there are visual production value type differences between those three videos, naturally because of the budgets. But actually, the one that I connected with the most emotionally, that made me kind of, you know, feel those feelings, those genuine feelings, was the cheapest one, the one that was shot for a grand. And that was that really spoke to me as a filmmaker as well. And it made me feel emboldened to go, I don't need a whole load of money to go and make things that make people feel and connect with people and tell stories. So that's obviously one that I was massively kind of struck by. And I think just generally as a brand, Wistia, they just really know their audience. They've got their personality nailed, and that personality comes from a variety, if not all, of their staff who appear in their videos all the time. It's not just one or two kind of faces of the brand from the marketing department. it's all of the people that work there. So I think that they are a perfect example to go and have a look at if you're interested in brand affinity. And then there are campaigns as well. And I think that this is where the really tricky thing comes in for brands, because creating brand affinity is a long-term goal. It's like SEO, you know, there are no guarantees necessarily, and it takes a long time. people don't really like hearing that. But the benefits of sticking with it and being focused on your goal and focused on the time it takes, you know, accepting the time it takes to achieve that, you could become, you know, Hoover. We all call, you know, vacuums Hoovers because it's synonymous with that. It's almost like, and like we Google things, we don't use a search engine to go and find something. I think that those levels of, you know, recognition are kind of some of the spoils of doing brand affinity marketing well and sticking with it for a long time. And if you've worked on the process that I kind of outlined in terms of looking at your personality, your brand associations, having one person in your business or maybe two people in your business who are the gatekeepers of your personality, once you've kind of worked through that process, and they could be anyone, they don't have to be the marketing team either, people who really just encapsulate and take responsibility for protecting what you've built as a personality for your brand affinity strategy ongoing, then it actually shouldn't be so much of an effort to keep that kind of process going for a long time. So yeah, so there are brand campaigns, I think, just to come all the way around back to my original point, there are brands that have come to they're well-known brands, and I'm not entirely sure about their level of brand affinity, but they have created campaigns using video and various different media that have really struck an emotional chord with people. And there's a common thread throughout the ones that have particularly kind of stuck with me that I always think of. They come to mind. But the This Girl Can campaign, their videos are unbelievably good. They're so inspiring. They use, you know, it's going back to using real people in those videos, real women, I guess. And there's no such thing as a fake woman, I guess. But, you know, just, you know, having people that are reflective of the people you see when you walk down the street, and just, you know, it was an incredibly empowering campaign that's continuing.
What sort of campaign was it? Was it social media? Was it TV?
Yeah, it was all. They had a set of video assets telling various different stories, and then kind of combined, you know, quick cut edited kind of videos of kind of women, you know, working out, like going for a run, kind of struggling but continuing, like pushing through. Just so relatable. I was like, yeah, that's me when I try and go for a run. I like kind of stop halfway if I'm lucky, and then, you know, have a bit of a meltdown. The distribution was a lot of social media. I think that they, yeah, put some budget behind that on social media as well, YouTube. They had ad campaigns on those videos on TV as well. TV is a really interesting one to consider at the moment. I think it's sometimes for brands, it's that attitude of, oh, that's going to cost loads of money and we're not going to be able to measure the return on that investment. But we're all in our homes a hell of a lot more now. So actually, it's definitely something worth considering. And, you know, we've started putting it in plans and thinking about having those conversations with clients as well, because, we're all inside quite a lot at the moment. And, you know, if you have a product or a service that is going to help people where they are, why not go to where they're spending time to advertise to them in a meaningful way? But there is, this girl campaign, the always hashtag like a girl campaign, another thing, and obviously Dove's very famous Real Beauty campaign. All three of those were amazingly powerful, and maybe it's just because I'm a woman that I connected with those, but I was quite interested in the fact that all of those had been harnessed particularly well when it comes to women. And I was really trying to think of other kind of examples that of that kind of brand affinity video marketing that were like not focused on women, or, you know, services relate that, you know, women would be sort of interested in, and products. I mean, I couldn't really think of so many off the top of my head. I did think of the Dollar Shave Club, which I think they had some great marketing in terms of relating to, they just got their personality across so well. And I think we're starting to see a lot more of brands doing that generally on social media as well, particularly on Twitter, which is a bit of a cesspool at times. But like, there's a lot of like kind of negativity on platforms like that sometimes. And I think it was only a few weeks ago where Yorkshire Tea stepped in to kind of, I can't remember exactly what it was now, but brands are doing a lot more of that. And not being worried about potentially losing, you know, followers or advocates, but actually kind of definitely standing up for the very real values that they have, kind of regardless of what the cost might be. So that's really interesting. And I think maybe that's a sign of the times we're going through, where people kind of have to nail their mask to the wall and, you know, kind of stick by what their values and standards and beliefs are. And that is working for brands, from what I see. Yeah, so that's a few of the examples of brands that I think are doing it well, or campaigns that have done it well. I think the challenge for, you know, things like This Girl Can and the Always Like a Girl campaign is that they're kind of, those campaigns are quite old now, and I haven't seen necessarily for Always a kind of continuation of that style of brand affinity marketing. So I don't think it's like a once and done kind of thing. I think there needs to be consistency and kind of years of focusing on that to really see a long-term consistent outcome.
It's funny how you say you hadn't seen any. So you talked about Dove and some of those other companies that are, I guess, essentially targeting women. And I was thinking to myself, have I seen anything that's similar that targets men in that way? And I haven't. I couldn't think of anything. And then you mentioned Dollar Shave Club. And I think, well, actually, the emotional trigger that I've seen most targeted towards men is humor. That's the one that comes across most for me. And that's just fascinating as well. It could mean that there's, it could be number one that it works. And so, you know, if it's not broke, don't kind of fix it. But at the same time, maybe there is a gap in marketing to connect with men on an emotional level that's similar to how some of these women's brands are doing, or some of the more these female oriented brands are doing. So that was interesting to me to kind of think about. And there's something in the show notes that I have to ask you about, because you had mentioned that Virgin had done something that made you cry during lockdown. Virgin's never made me cry, so I need to know how Virgin made you cry.
So just as a disclaimer, I cry at everything, mostly happy things. It's very rarely sad things make me cry. But happy things just make me bawl, or anything slightly sentimental. I really shouldn't be telling possibly thousands of people this. they had a video series of ads on running quite a lot. So I saw this ad quite a lot. Eventually it stopped making me cry. And it was during lockdown, so maybe I was particularly sort of emotional anyway, but it was about, it was Virgin Media, actually. So, you know, technicians coming around to houses, helping people sort of stay connected, basically, you know, very, very easy message to kind of come up with. No offense, Virgin, we'd love to speak. But yeah, I think they were one of the first brands I saw that went, oh, the most important thing right now is that people are separated. And what we do is keep people connected, keep people online, and we you know, like there's never been an easier message at an easier time to send. But the way they went about it and the kind of visuals that they had, I think it was also them that created a series of ads of kids, school kids connecting online as well, while they couldn't sort of go into school and see their friends and that kind of stuff. And I was like, well, kids, emotional music equals me crying. And I am a Virgin Media customer. So, and to be honest, I don't think, I think I've got that loyalty there for sure. But that kind of marketing just makes me feel like they do really understand the emotional needs of the customers and their potential customers. And they didn't, and it didn't feel exploitative either. So I feel like I'm quite a cynical person as well as quite, you know, kind of emotionally connected or intelligent or whatever. And the, and the way they did it, a great example. So people should go and have a look at those as a way of connecting meaningfully with a, you know, timely message, but not a new message, definitely not a new message for them. And maybe they did some work around, you know, what does this mean for us? You know, this lockdown, what does it mean for our customers? What does Virgin Media say in a time like this? The people that, you know, need to feel connected. So, yeah, so that made me cry a couple of times. And then I got off.
So to all of our listeners, go and take on the Virgin Crying Challenge on social media. Just film yourself watching the ads and see if you break.
Yeah, film it. Put it on TikTok. Give it a like.
And yeah, Rachel's already out because the challenge broke her. There are a couple of questions that, around this kind of section that we're talking about brands that have emotionally connected and with you that I do want to ask you. And the first is, out of all of those brands that you just mentioned, has that emotional connection translated to you being a customer? So thinking about, I don't know, Wistia, Dove, Virgin, you mentioned you're already a Virgin customer. Did you happen to purchase from Wistia, Dove, or any of those other brands as you were talking?
Because of the kind of that style of marketing, I think the only one I've kind of become a customer of is Wistia. But then I've years ago kind of used their video embedding, video kind of SEO product a few times. And that, you know, that was probably about five or six years ago, quite a long time. And since then, they've developed massively in all aspects, but especially in terms of brand affinity marketing. You know, maybe they've been working away at that for a long time and it's paying off now from my experience of it. Yeah, I think, you know, going along to that that screening and Q&A at the Odeon that was part of Brighton, kind of a kind of fringe event for Brighton SEO a couple of years ago, and being involved in that, watching the movies, watching the movie and seeing kind of just how they work behind the scenes and recognizing those shared values. It definitely turned me into what I would say a fan, and they consistently put out incredibly accessible and helpful content in all kinds of formats. So obviously their video marketing is really, really great. And I think that the language they kind of use as well, it's just very clear that they know who they want to speak to and what language those people use. And I think they've created quite a good, it's definitely a very good example of brand affinity, because it's almost like creating a club. Like, it's almost making consumers feel like they are part of your business in more of a way than just being a customer, because it's about those shared values and more importantly, I think, shared interests. They just seem to put out content that I'm like already thinking about. So I think there was an example a couple of months ago about I think it was just choosing between cameras, so showing different I think it was lenses, actually. It was just a very simple video about how different lenses can achieve different shots and how those different lenses help create different emotions for essentially the same shot. or different tones and that kind of stuff. And it was around the time that I was starting to film my first kind of short film during lockdown. And I don't know whether they've got like a direct line into my brain for the information that I need, but that is kind of what brand affinity is. It's like almost like a seamless connection between you and a brand. So yeah, long story short, I did become a customer of theirs kind of when that feeling started to kick in.
And there's another thing that kind of comes to mind for me as you're talking, and as you, I think you were talking about attending a live, yeah, you were talking about when you went to see Wistia and we watched the film in a cinema. And I was just thinking to myself, maybe one of the reasons video is so important right now is we don't have the live event. So in a live environment, there's the ability to make an emotional connection because it's you and the business, you and the brand. It doesn't mean that brands always manage to achieve that. You know, sometimes you go to events and conferences and people hide behind their desks and so forth. But if you get it right, there's such an ability at live events to make an immediate impact and lasting emotional connection. Mm-hmm. Like, it's so impactful. I think about that because I agree with you. I became a fan of Wistia that night. I think I'd used it a little bit before and known about mm-hmm. them, but they really came to life for me as a business from that event. And I think it was through being there, through being involved in the Q&A, watching the film with lots of other mm-hmm. people. And now we don't have that. So... and it doesn't look like we're going to have that for quite a while. So the natural, I guess, next thing in line that has the biggest impact is video, which was just an interesting thought for me as you were talking, because maybe that is why you do need to focus even more so on video than ever, because you don't have that live connection in any way. Almost.
Yeah, you need to kind of make up the space that's that lack of sort of live.
That void.
Yeah, that black void of darkness. it's the thing that, you know, it's essentially the sense of community. One of the things that I missed more than my family and my friends during lockdown and all of that stuff was going to the
careful don't want them listening. Yes, this better be good.
They know. but yeah, it was going to the cinema and the kind of community of you know, the Duke of York's is just around the corner from my house. I think I spend more time there. Well, I did spend more time there. And I've been a couple of times since the restrictions because I couldn't hold myself back from going. It's definitely a kind of self-care activity for me to go to the cinema by myself, get taken away by what's ever on the screen and just, you know, forget the real world for a couple of hours. And I think that is definitely, I got that sense from that event, that Wistia event, when we went to go and see the 110-100 film, you know, the community of coming together. But I think, is it another delicate balance? Because I get the feeling that people are getting like online event fatigue. It's like we all have to be at a laptop every day. You know, most of us are communicating with each other in our businesses via video calls. And I run Brighton Digital Women, which is a community in Brighton. It's very, very much based on being physically in the same room with each other. And we haven't done any online events. We kind of made the decision to not do any online events because people were doing online quizzes to stay connected, talking to their families online, going to some events online, attending webinars. And I got the sense that at some point people were getting really fatigued of that. So I think it's really important to recognize that and not annoy people by sort of potentially requesting their attendance at an event, sat at their desk for, you know, sometimes a few hours. But actually what video does, and if you utilize a YouTube channel, have regular scheduling, a regular calendar of content that you're creating with that brand affinity in mind, you're providing that video or that event via video on someone else's terms. So it's not a scheduled thing in terms of I have to turn up at my desk, turn on and attend this event at this time, you know, 11 o'clock on a Wednesday for a few hours. If you're putting that content on your YouTube channel or on your website, then people get to attend that on their own terms. But it's there for when they are kind of, you know, and that comes back to understanding the mindset of your customer or your audience. If people are kind of fed up of having to be at an online event at a specific time and that's the only time they can access that content and that event. It's frustrating, and it's not a good feeling for some people who are getting that kind of online event webinar kind of fatigue. But if you can run webinars and you can run those events, but just make sure that content's available later on a YouTube channel or your website. So people are feeling like you're providing for the experience, the unique experience specifically for them as well. Otherwise it can feel quite demanding, I think.
Okay, so we've spoken a lot about how, I guess, brands can create affinity, and also how some brands have created an emotional connection with you. And on the flip side, what do you think happens if brands don't focus on brand affinity at this time?
At this time or any time? I think the main risk is that one of your competitors is going to do it. They're going to put in the time to create a brand affinity strategy, to consider all of the things that we've spoken about this morning, and that they're going to go ahead and do it and get ahead, because like we said, brand affinity marketing isn't a once and done thing, and it can take years to really reap the rewards of that. So if people are recognizing that now, for good or for ill, for COVID-19, and have started work on that, then I guess you're already kind of vulnerable in that way, because brand affinity creates such a strong, almost unbreakable, unconditional connection between a consumer and a brand. Like I said, making them feel like they are part of your brand, and that they're not just loyal to you but supportive to you in terms of time, effort and money, as well as advocacy, then you're kind of going to get a bit left behind. So I think the risk is someone else doing it, and also the risk of someone else doing it better than you. So I think learning about it, listening to this podcast and reading, the other kind of resources that we can share, and speaking to us about brand affinity marketing and video marketing are all things that people should be thinking about doing now, because the risk is one of your competitors will do that themselves. And I think that's probably the main risk. I mean, I think if you don't focus on brand affinity, if you don't focus on brand affinity, and that
someone else will
basically.
It reminds me of a conversation I was having a few episodes ago with the co-founders of a company called Imagine here in the UK, who focus on Gen Z marketing. Yeah. So shout out to Jay Richards and Kat Agostino. They were great guests. And they were talking about how, essentially this topic, we didn't use brand affinity as a phrase, but they were talking about how Gen Z in particular are looking for values. Mm-hmm. They're assessing your company values. And if they don't find that you stand for something, they will move on. It's the equivalent of having a short attention span. If someone is emotionally connecting with Gen Z more than others, because they're showing outright their values and their commitment to their customers and making an emotional connections, they're happy to jump ship. Mm. And Jay and Kat were talking about how, perhaps that's a generational difference, but they know through their consultants, working with their Gen Z consultants, that's definitely a fact. So it kind of ties in with what you were saying. And perhaps generationally, there's a difference. Perhaps some generations are faster to move on to others. Perhaps as we get older, we're more sentimental when we stick with the brands we know, regardless of their emotional connection. But, the world's ever evolving. Mm-hmm. There's a new generation upcoming, and it seems like brand affinity for the younger generation, the generation younger than us, it's more important to them than ever. So I think that ties in with what you're saying.
Yeah, I think the issues of diversity and inclusion very much tie in with that as well, because I know that there's a stat out there, and I'm probably going to get it wrong, but it's definitely within the next 5 years, I think it was something like between 70 and 80% of the workforce are going to be who are now like Gen Z, and they are looking at businesses to work for who have considered and have, you know, diversity and inclusion within the business. So that's kind of, you know, that it's almost like, you know, that brand affinity is really important for consumers, but brand affinity is also really, really important for recruiting, you know, your future staff as well.
Amazing. And that's great information, because again, taking it full circle, if you've got the right staff who are kind of emotionally intelligent and emotionally aware, they're going to become great marketers too. And you're going to have some great marketing. And you spoke a little bit earlier about some resources or tools to get started, but any recommendations for our listeners about where they can learn more about brand affinity marketing that you've kind of really enjoyed?
Yeah. So I know Brandwatch have a great brand affinity, some greater brand affinity content on their site. So I'll include those links for you to include in the show notes, as well as kind of sound again like a Wistia fangirl, but they actually have an incredibly well presented brand affinity guide on their site as well. I was looking at that a few weeks ago. So I'll find the link to that as well and share that. But it's a great kind of interactive guide that you kind of work through to kind of really understand the aspects of brand affinity, and it's got some really practical tips in there. And of course, I'm always happy to talk to anybody about all of this stuff. There's, you know, we've unpacked quite a lot, but there's so much more to it as well. And I think it's one of those marketing conversations that, you know, is coming to the fore a little bit more now. And I think that it would be really great to have those conversations either with me or within your marketing teams, your business, you know, business teams, and, you know, talk about these kind of ideas, because that's how kind of marketing disciplines get more sophisticated, and, you know, how we can sort of share knowledge about those, about those things. So yeah, I've got a list of campaign examples as well of where I think brand affinity marketing has been applied really effectively. So all of those things I'll send to you, Scott, and you can put them in the show notes. And again, yeah, if anybody wants to talk to me about it, I am always up for a chat.
Well, that's a good note in closing. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me about this topic today and making me more aware about number one, the terminology brand affinity marketing, and just sharing some of your examples and connections and thoughts with us and with me in particular. And on that note, can you just let people know where they can find you and where they can get to your heart, as you described earlier?
Where they can hunt me down and make me feel things.
Yeah.
So I am on Twitter. I'm at Real Rachel Finch, which is slightly confusing because that's my maiden name. But yeah, I'm on there. I'm on Instagram as well. At Rachel Finch Pearson, where I've combined all of the names. And then I've got a podcast of my own called the Fan Made Film Podcast, where I talk about filmmaking with some really amazing directors from around the world. And we're on YouTube and Spotify and all of that as well. So, so I'm kind of on all of those channels. And I'm happy to hear from anybody about anything. Particularly marketing and filmmaking. So, yeah.
Wonderful. All to our listeners, all of our show notes are at sitevisibility.co.uk. You can find us on all social platforms, and everything we've linked today will be in the show notes on all podcast platforms as well. Rachel, thanks so much for your time. Mm-hmm. Great to speak to you, and look forward to having you on again in the future.
Yeah, thank you very much, Scott. Cheers.
Take care. Bye. Bye.
Small details are big surfaces, tight corners are odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.